I mentioned, one without fear. My chest suddenly grew tight, imagining Mary having a coughing attack during the voyage. She's got medicine with her, but six. It worries me. You shouldn't worry. Even if you hadn't told me the details, I know you wouldn't have let any detail be overlooked. Yes. Yes. I took a deep breath. It was as comforting to hear someone speak of her as it was for me to talk. I've done all I can for her trip. Now I've just got to secure that rich husband and make sure he's crazy about me. Jago stiffened a little, but didn't remove his hand. How could anyone not be? He asked, voice light. Well, some aren't going to be so crazy about a stepdaughter. But you've already taken that into consideration. Of course, I've got a story ready about how I'm the widow of some tragically lost soldier and that I had to hide it in the glittering court. I figure if someone's in love with me enough, he won't mind. Yes, he certainly wouldn't. That was why I fought so hard to be the best at everything. I needed to get first pick, to have as many choices as I could to get the ideal match. I just pray my best choices haven't been snatched up. Are you ever going to tell this husband the truth? Before we're married? Before, after, any time. The tone of Jago's voice surprised me, and I didn't like it. In the long run, who can say? But no, not before. I can't take any chances. So you'd be going into marriage under a lie? I turned to Jago, so incredulous that I couldn't even form words right away. Instead, I brushed his hand away and got to my feet. Don't preach to me, Jago. You've got no right to morals, not with the way you wheel and deal the gullible and push off liquor on people you know are supposed to avoid it. That's not the same thing at all. They know what they're going into. You haven't had to make the choices I have. If there was some perfect, easy solution to all of this, I never would have set foot on that damned ship. I wish I could be good and honest in everything I do. I try to, but I have no regrets over what I've done to take care of my daughter, no matter how ruthless it seems. I'd do it all again, and I'd do worse. Tamsin, I'm done with riding today. I walked over to Dove and guided her toward the road. I'll walk her back, if you'll allow it. Tamsin. This time, he cut himself off. With a sigh, he took Pebble's reins and caught up to me, though he didn't say a word the whole way back to Kerneil. Orla invited us to eat with her and her sisters, and a green cotton dress materialized on my bed where the nightgown had been. It was a less extravagant version of Orla's, with the same high waist and scooped neckline, but no gratuitously long sleeves. It was worn over a simple linen chemise, without a belt or clips, and felt absurdly comfortable for formal wear. I almost laughed as I dressed, thinking of the complexities of petticoats, underdresses, overdresses, and corsets that would be required for a comparable Asfridian dinner. Jago and I were seated side by side, but the dark cloud still hung over us. We talked readily enough with everyone else, but barely looked at each other. Several of the diners had been at the earlier meeting, and we learned that they'd voted to give us the benefit of the doubt on our story. This was largely because of Jago's insistence on the truth of what we'd discovered. Many knew him, and the Bitterroot incident had earned him a lot of favour. That didn't mean the Ikori would be openly declaring war on the Larandians any time soon, but Orla's sister Stana was already working on messages to send to outlying clans, apprising them of the situation and warning to be watchful for more alleged Asfridian attacks. Favour, the youngest, was obsessed with coming up with schemes to catch the Larandians in the act of wrongdoing, though few of her ideas were plausible. Orla was tasked with dealing with the colonists in the hope of ensuring they'd stand down from any retaliatory actions until the mystery was solved. From her expression, it was clearly not a job she was thrilled about. A guest delayed Jago as we were leaving, and I went to my room alone. Later, when he came knocking, I didn't answer. He left me alone after a few tries, and I sank onto my bed, my heart breaking. It wasn't just the fight with Jago that had me hurting. It was Jago himself. My brilliant plan to launch my daughter and me into a better lifestyle seemed tarnished now. I still had no moral qualms about marrying someone for money. It was done all the time. But since Jago had no money, he couldn't be that someone, and it bothered me. It also bothered me to even be bothered by that. I'd only known him a short time, and he'd driven me crazy for most of it. Doing what I'd done with him during those few passionate times had only made this worse. If I'd displayed any shred of self-control, maybe I wouldn't feel so conflicted right now. Instead, I'd left both of us confused and upset, and taken my eyes from what mattered most. Mary. I couldn't let that happen again. When I woke, I felt a little more clear-headed, but it was underscored with a grim resignation. I knew what I had to do, and the sooner it was taken care of, the better. As soon as I'd cleaned up for the day, I headed out. But when I opened my door, Jago was standing right outside, his hand raised to knock. "Oh," he exclaimed. "How's that for timing?" I swallowed and glanced down at the stone-tiled floor. "I was just coming to see you."
"Well, I was coming to see you."
"And Tamsin, look, about yesterday, I looked up, and the tension and his anguished expression were too much for me. "Oh, Jago."
"Nope, nope."
He held up a hand. "Don't old Jago me. I deserve that scolding. You were too easy on me, actually. I have no business judging you. You're right that I haven't been through what you have. I can't even imagine. Come in and talk." I stepped aside and waited for him to pass before I closed the door. "Look, I know you weren't trying to be... That is, I know you meant well." He shoved his hands in his pockets and walked over to the fireplace.
"Mostly."
"Mostly?" I joined him, and in his profile, an array of emotions flashed by, too tangled for me to read.
"What I said, I believe. Why I was saying it. Well, that was me being petty over your hypothetical husband. My own hurt feelings, which have no right to be hurt."
My heartbeat suddenly felt so heavy and so fast, it was a wonder he couldn't hear it. Why are you hurt?"
"Tamsin, you know why. I understand why you're doing this, but it's hard to be chipper about it when I..."
With a heavy sigh, he turned around and walked back toward the door.
"Never mind. I shouldn't bother you with my rambling."
"I don't know. I dare say I've grown accustomed to it. In fact, I kind of like it."
He stopped, his back to me.
"No joking, Tamsin. Not today.
I'm crazy about you. I have been since you walked through my door. But I'm not going to hassle you when you've got your sights fixed on better men."
"The thing is..." I took a few steps toward him. "I don't think I'm going to find a better man than you." Jago slowly turned around and met my eyes, his green and gold ones so filled with emotion that its power nearly knocked me over. "Now, that doesn't mean I can... Well, I still have to go to Cape Triumph and find someone," I continued. "Mary's still first. My wants come second, or not at all. And that's what I was coming to tell you." His eyebrows rose, and he moved a little closer, too.
"You were?"
"Yes. I was going to your room to tell you that what we did in the storm and outside, well, that it has to stop. I wanted to make sure you knew that I still wanted to work with you and be your travelling partner, but that I came to Adoria for a reason and will see that plan through."
"I get it," he said, face falling.
"I knew it. I was accepting it. But when it's spelled out like that, it's harsh." "Well, it's what I was going to tell you. And it's all still true. I'm just not
saying it right now? He looked understandably confused, but also hopeful.
Then, what are you saying now?
I took a deep breath and reached for him. That I'm a little crazy about you, too. I think I might have actually been just plain crazy, too, as we came together and kissed. It was ridiculous. I just explained that we couldn't have a future, and yet I couldn't stop kissing him. I melted into him and ran my fingers through his unruly hair, bringing him nearer in the process. For someone who'd been ready to walk away moments ago, he showed no hesitancy in the kiss. Neither did I, for that matter. It went on, and maybe it wasn't one long kiss, so much as a whole bunch of little ones strung together. Whatever it was, I lost myself in it and let go of worry and responsibility for a time. I tugged him toward the bed, and he followed without hesitation. We fell onto it together, still kissing and tentatively reaching for each other's clothing. That was also when a loud knock sounded at the door. We both bolted upright and stared at it. A childlike panic hit me that somehow, impossibly, we'd been found out. But that couldn't be, and a few moments later, a servant's voice rang through. Dana? Jago and I released each other, and after a deep breath to calm my racing heart, I walked sedately to the door and opened it. Shersha, a young Ikori woman who'd helped me a number of times, stood there.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Don Jago wasn't in his... Oh, hello.
She peered past me in pleasant surprise.
Anyway, Dana Orla sent me. There are Asfridians here.
Jago strode to my side.
Asfridians? What Asfridians? Where are they from?
Grashand colony, from a town called Constancy.
She tripped over the unfamiliar name as she glanced between us.
And they're insisting on seeing you.
Chapter 25. Immediately, an image of grey and black clad heirs raising pitchforks at the gates of Kerniel popped into my head. I clutched at Jago's sleeve.
We have to get out of here. There must be some way to escape, right? Passages, a back door.
Orla wouldn't be calling for us if there was a threat, Jago assured me, though he didn't look all that easy about this news.
How many are there?
Three. One is a soldier.
Neither Jago nor I knew of any soldiers in Constancy.
What about the other visitors? I asked.
Shersha frowned, eyes thoughtful.
One is older, maybe 40. He doesn't have much hair, and what's there is black. The other is our age, golden hair.
A small smile played at her lips. Very handsome.
Gideon, Jago and I said together.
Gideon wouldn't harm us, I said. And that doesn't sound like Samuel. But what about the soldier?
There isn't an army lurking somewhere, is there? Surely we haven't warranted that.
Jago shook his head.
Orla wouldn't allow a soldier in if she suspected there were others lying in wait. If we're being summoned, the area's been scouted.
He started to follow Shersha, but I stayed rooted to the spot.
I'm not going back there, I said, when he noticed I wasn't with him. I'm not going back in that bloody room.
You won't.
I promise. There's nothing they can do to you.
But what about to you?
You said you weren't worried about going back for your cargo because there was no proof we'd taken off together.
Well, if they see us now, they kind of is.
Did they ask for us by name? Jago inquired of Shersha.
When she nodded, he turned back to me. They probably already know. I followed with trepidation, more uneasy now about what would happen to him than to me.
Shersha took us back to the grand sitting room with the giant hearth.
Orla was already there, fully decked out in princess attire, chatting with two men in dark clothing.
Gideon turned when we entered, his face lighting up like a sunburst. Tamsin! He exclaimed. He rushed over to me and clasped my hands. Thank Euros! I've been so worried about you. I'm so glad you're okay. I've missed you. We all have. No one knew what to think when you disappeared. The other visitor's back was to me, and when he finally turned, I was relieved to see Roger Sackett, one of Constance's magistrates. I wasn't really chummy with him, but I also had no grudge against him. What he thought of me was a different matter.
Running out on a punishment is a serious matter, Roger said sternly. His eyes flicked to Jago. As is helping a person do so. Or did you take her against her will?
I found my voice again and came to life. Of course he didn't, and I don't regret running out for an instant, especially since I didn't break any law.
You didn't, a new voice said.
Jago and I peered around, spying the soldier in a dim corner of the room. He'd been studying a sculpture so quietly, we hadn't even seen him at first. The black-haired man stepped forward, wearing the green uniform of the Asphridian army.
And I really hope I don't have to send word back to Osprit of abuse of the charter. Everyone turns a blind eye to Grushund, but there may come a...
Jago? Is that you?
Lieutenant Harper.
Jago met the soldier in the middle of the room, shaking hands. What are you doing out here?
Oh, the usual. Following up on kidnapping, treason, and attack by an outside force.
Jago's bewilderment left him short on words.
Wait, me? All that?
Harper gave a small shrug of his shoulder.
That's what they say. When that's dealt with, I need to talk to you about some provisions. The fort's almost out of tobacco and flour, but we'd take cornmeal in a pinch.
Oh, well, I can help you out there. But first... Jago glanced back at the two Constancy townsmen.
Why are they here? You don't need them to arrest me. Are they going to try and cart Tamsin back?
Gideon and Roger gave each other uncertain looks.
She certainly can't stay here with a bunch of...
Roger shut his mouth, remembering Orla was nearby. I could tell from his body language that she made him doubly uncomfortable, in a quarry and a woman in charge of governance.
Well, there's no need for Tamsin to be an inconvenience here anymore.
She's not. Orla had been observing everything with that mild, amused expression of hers, but her eyes were as shrewd as ever. She may stay as long as she likes.
And I actually won't need to, I added. I'm going south with the Ikori, to Denham, and then Cape Triumph.
Gideon blanched.
Wait, what?
I explained my travel plans. Gideon fell silent while Roger grew increasingly angry.
Are you out of your mind, girl, going off alone with these people? These people didn't subject me to starvation or exposure. They don't lower themselves to that sort of torture.
Orla shrugged. Don't sanctify us too much, Tamsin. There are plenty of things we don't take lightly. But no, I wouldn't starve someone over mittens or punish them for selling medicine.
Roger made a dismissive gesture. That's the past. The present is this girl, who is not an adult, being kidnapped by a traitor sympathetic to a hostile nation and taken to that hostile nation.
Okay. Let's work through this, said Harper. He crossed his arms and came to stand next to me.
First off, she's not in Grushund, and she's, what was it, 20? She's an adult in every other colony, as well as Osfrid. If she wants to stay, which she clearly does, she can. As for you, Jago, I didn't buy much into the claims of kidnapping, but it's no secret you're friendly with the Ikori. That doesn't mean you're betraying secrets to them or conspiring with them, but enough is going on right now that I need to treat everything seriously.
Orla regarded him with a cool smile. Is this where you get to the part about attack by an outside force? Harper's answering expression managed to be both apologetic and stern.
Constance's council wrote to the commander of my fort in North Grushund, asking for protection from the Ikori. They aren't the first town to do so. Now, Mistress McNamara,
If things progress, I'm sure someone will suggest a formal sit-down between my people and yours, with a lot of people and a lot of opinions that'll probably quickly go to arguing and grandstanding. You seem very reasonable and level-headed, and so if you and I could reach a quiet understanding about the nature of your attacks before someone's actually killed, I think it'd be helpful to all of us.
I couldn't agree more, she said, getting comfortable in one of the chairs. But the first piece of this quiet understanding has to be that they aren't our attacks. Shersha, will you send for my sisters? And get us some tea and coffee while you're out. This may take a while.
It did, which surprised me. In my mind, I'd imagined a dramatic reveal of Alan's jacket, immediately clearing up all suspicions toward the Ikori. Instead, Roger's first assessment was, "How do I know you got that from the Lorandians? Seems more likely you got it here, when those Ikori thieves delivered the loot to their masters."
But he did keep listening. And more important, so did Lieutenant Harper. I soon realized it was a lucky break that he was the one the fort had sent to address Constance's grievances. There were probably many other officers at the fort who would have come in with their opinions already settled on the Ikori. Harper hadn't made his mind up either way. He was neither a pushover nor a warmonger. He asked a lot of questions and took note of everyone's views. Me, Jago, the Constancy men, and the McNamara sisters.
"Mr. Sackett," he said at last, "I don't take what happened to those children lightly. I don't take any of the recent attacks lightly. That being said, I would strongly urge you not to instigate any aggressive actions toward the Ikori in Grashand. Keep your sentries, but that's it. No outlawing of Ikori or preemptive strikes. I know I don't have any say in municipal actions, but I'll be making the same report to my commander. He doesn't have civil authority either, but he does have the ear of the governor."
Roger scowled.
"The governor's in Watchful. That place has nearly lost its way. What do they know about what goes on here in the West?"
"He'll know what we tell him. And if things change and the evidence shifts, the military will act accordingly. But as it stands, the evidence isn't strong enough to implicate the Ikori or vindicate the Lorandians."
Despite Roger's grumbling, I could tell that the evidence had affected him too. He was a magistrate, after all. It was his job to weigh the facts in legal matters. But he was also human, and his pride smarted at having to back down and give the benefit of the doubt to those he was so deeply prejudiced against.
"I can't believe this all stands on you believing Jacob Robinson about where they found the coat," muttered Roger, needing to place his frustration somewhere.
Harper smiled. "I've known Jago, or is it Jacob, for 2 years, and he's always dealt fairly with us. More or less. I trust him."
"We trusted him too. He promised to keep that bitterroot safe and then sold it out right from under us."
Favor jumped up from her chair, fists clenched.
"He saved countless lives. Probably yours too, if the fever had spread out of Kerniel. Jago is a hero, far more selfless than you'll ever be."
Roger's eyes went wide.
"Young lady,"
Harper shushed him before he had a chance to say something to one of Kerniel's 3 rulers that couldn't be taken back. Likewise, Orla rattled off a sharp rebuke in Ikori, and after a few moments, Favors sat back down with a glower. An odd, troubled look had come over Gideon's face, but I didn't have time to pass it. Reassured that Grashand and the Ikori were not going to war, for now, Harper and the sisters wanted to discuss the political implications of some of the other goings-on between the Ikori and colonists farther out in Adoria. That didn't require the rest of us, and Shersha led Jago, Roger, Gideon and me to a small room used for weaving so that we could work out our differences. Not that there was much to be worked out. I'd made up my mind that I was going with the Ikori, but I did have questions for our guests.
"How are my friends?" I asked Gideon. "Are they okay?"
Gideon pulled up a small wooden chair and sat down.
They are. They miss you, though, and there's been some friction since you left. A few went into a complete panic because they don't believe they're going to Cape Triumph now.
Those words tore at my heart, and I looked down at my hands to hide how I felt. After seeing the way Orla and her sisters held their own among men, I refused to start crying in front of these three.
I don't suppose there's been any response to my letter to Jasper Thorne, I asked, hopefully.
No, I don't even know if it's possible. Gideon's eyes narrowed as he did some mental calculations. Assuming it made it straight to Watchful on the coast with no delays overland, it would have had to immediately get on a ship to Cape Triumph and get a same-day response from him. Then that letter would have to make the return trip with no delays. Even then, I'd say the soonest you'd hear back is another week, and that'd be extraordinary in the best of times, let alone winter.
I nodded. I'd expected as much.
Well, then the other girls will get there when they get there, and I'll be able to alert Jasper to their situation in person, assuming everything goes as it's supposed to on your end. Roger caught my tone.
I understand why you don't want to return to Constancy, but rest assured, we are going to honour our word to help the rest of the girls get to Cape Triumph. And believe what you want, but I am trying to protect you. I wouldn't want my own child to go off with those godless barbarians, and I don't want you to either.
Despite his brusqueness, there was a sense of good intentions in his words. He believed he was doing the right thing.
Thank you, I said, truly, but my decision is made. I'll write letters to the others that you can take back with you, and if there's anything I can do to help ahead of their arrival in Cape Triumph, I will.
Roger gave a shrug. Gideon looked truly disheartened, and I had a vivid image of the girls in Constancy wearing similar expressions. No guilt, I firmly told myself. I'd help the other girls if I could, but I was Mary's mother. Not theirs. They would have to be their own advocates.
Well, that's that.
Roger slid his stool back and rose.
I did my duty, but failed with you, girl. Rest easy. We'll give a faithful report to the council of what happened. Let's see if Harper's ready, Gideon. If we leave now, we can get a good jump on the day. Gideon?
Gideon hadn't moved. He wore that same troubled look I'd noticed earlier. Slowly, he lifted his eyes to Roger's.
Is it true what was said back there? When Jacob took the medicine, were the Ikori already sick?
Jago spoke before the magistrate could.
Yes, there was an outbreak of black fever here.
Why didn't I ever hear about that? Asked Gideon, aghast.
The council never mentioned it. All we heard was that he broke the pact for more money. Because it was irrelevant.
Roger leaned against the wall, tapping his fingers impatiently.
The bitterroot was promised to us, for our use. It doesn't matter who he sold it to or why.
I'd think it matters if human lives were on the line. Do you know how many people live here?
No. What I do know is that if a similar affliction strikes Constancy, we'll suffer. Human lives will be on the line too, and likely lost now. That will happen whether he sold it to them in sickness or in health.
Gideon got to his feet and approached Roger with neither nervousness nor gentle words.
But surely there should have been some consideration, given the circumstances. Some compromise or solution. Did you really just outright refuse the request and consign those people to death?
Roger shook his head.
They deny Euros and the Angels, and have probably killed more of our people in Adoria than that fever would have taken of theirs. It wasn't worth pursuing some compromise or solution with people like that, even if such a thing had existed.
One did, I interjected. Jago offered to restock the town's supply, but missed his chance because of the council's censure.
Is that true? Gideon exclaimed.
His cheeks were flushed, with anger, not shyness. It was the first time I'd ever seen him so worked up. Even when we'd been threatened by the Larandians, he'd remained calm.
You wasted that time with him, when it all could have been settled so simply.
Roger's condescension shifted to something harder and colder.
Gideon, you have my respect as a minister, but you are a junior minister. You are still, in many ways, an outsider with much to learn.
Jago pulled my arm and stood up.
Tamsin, let's give them some privacy. Before I could protest and demand some answers, Saoirse appeared in the doorway and loudly cleared her throat.
Pardon me, she said uncertainly, but the Darnas are asking for you again.
Animosity crackled between Gideon and Roger, but the two put their dispute on hold to go back to the hearth room with us. The group in there looked ready to disperse, but Orla beckoned us to where she stood with Lieutenant Harper.
I'm going to get the word out, here in the north, to hold off any aggressive action until things are sorted out, he said. But the south has seen a few of these weird raids too, and I want to make sure nobody jumps the gun there.
Orla nodded along. To help him get there faster, we've agreed to let him send a small group of soldiers down the East Sister River to spread the word. They'll accompany us on the trip next week, and we'll bump some of our people from it to make room. They'll go on a second expedition, leaving about 2 weeks later, an expedition that will have enough room to accommodate your friends and the others from the ship, Tamsin. I gasped.
Do you mean that?
They'll still have to pay passage, of course, Orla added.
Certainly. Thank you, Orla. You have no idea what that means to me and what it will mean to them. 3 weeks! I was so excited I could barely stand still.
Adding in travel time down the river and across Denham, the other girls would be in Cape Triumph in just under 2 months, well ahead of the three if they went with the heirs. Jago ran a hand through his hair, and I could see thoughts spinning behind his eyes.
Can I have those spots on the later trip, Orla, and then let the grey gull passengers take mine on the upcoming one?
Orla's wry smile vanished.
You want to give up your early passage? It isn't that much of a delay, he replied with a shrug. I'll still be ahead of most of the other northern traders, and it'll be easier on Tamsin and the others to all stay together.
I see. Orla glanced to me, then back to him.
It makes no difference to me. As long as the space is divided out correctly and everyone's ready to go on time, it's fine.
I turned to Jago, scarcely able to breathe. I'd struggled so hard to get my companions to Cape Triumph the moment we set foot in Adoria, and suddenly, just like that, it was going to happen.
Jago, I can't believe you'd do this. I don't know what to say. Thank you so much. And if there is a loss in profit...
He dismissed my worries with a wave of his hand, his eyes shining as he regarded me. I wanted to leap forward and throw my arms around him.
Don't worry about it. 2 weeks won't matter. And besides, the numbers should work out so that I can come along on the first run and get things in place. I'll have Arnaud accompany the rest of the goods.
Don't get carried away, warned Roger gruffly. You may be free and on your own, Tamsin, but those other girls are still under our protection and aren't leaving without a proper escort. I don't know if that can happen in a week.
I looked to Lieutenant Harper for help.
There's an argument that the older girls could come or go as they wanted, he said. But you've got some young ones there too, right? 16, 17. As much as I think they should be allowed to go, they should still be answering to their guardians. I'll personally assist in accompanying them to Cape Triumph, if that helps, Mr. Sackett.
And I'll go too, said Gideon. I'm sure if we can just get a couple more from Constancy to chaperone, that should be adequate.
I'll also go back with you two to help get everyone here. We can go right away, Jago suggested.
Roger still looked dubious, but he knew when to concede. The four of them fell into planning the logistics, and I was happy enough to dance. After obstacle upon obstacle, things were finally getting back on track.
I was going to Cape Triumph, and my friends were too. We'd be free of the heirs at last. I'd be there in plenty of time for Mary. Almost. The feel of Jago's kiss lingered on my lips, and his words echoed in my head. I'm crazy about you. I have been since you walked through my door. Watching him as he talked numbers with Roger, I felt a tightness in my chest. Jago was not falling into place with any of this, because he had no place. He never had. We both understood that, and yet he'd still just made a considerable concession to help my friends. Except, I knew it was really for me. Maybe missing 2 weeks of the trading season wasn't a lot, but for someone scraping against debt the way he was, it still could have been an edge. And he'd given it up. I wanted a chance to talk to him, but he got swept up with preparations that I couldn't help with. My turn for leadership would come when my friends arrived, but for now, I had to bide my time. Though he'd been busy too, I did get an unexpected opportunity to speak with Gideon later in the day, when I spied him eating alone in the dining hall. I walked in and sat down across from him, eliciting a glad smile. "I thought you'd be holed up with the others," I said. "We've finished what we can do before we go to Constancy. Jacob is off discussing weights and measures with the Ikori now, and Roger's praying no heretics will come for him in his sleep." "Are you doing okay?" I asked, noting his plate of food was mostly untouched. His smile turned rueful. "As okay as I can be, having what I thought I understood ripped apart before my eyes."
"You mean about Jago and the medicine?"
"Yes. To be deceived like that. It's like everything I thought was beautiful and good in Constancy has fallen away into a black void. That sounds melodramatic, I suppose. But I still can't believe it, that the council would refuse aid and cover it all up. There is some good in Constancy." My words came out a little haltingly, given my personal experiences. "I know, but it doesn't change what's happened. I gave the council my loyalty, my friendship, and my trust, and they were knowingly lying to me, using me to further what they wanted. And what they did to you, they didn't order it exactly, but they allowed Dinah to initiate it. I swear I didn't know Tamsin. If I had..."
"It's okay. I'm fine. And things have worked out."
"I can't go back," he blurted out. "I mean, I can physically go back to Constancy, temporarily, for any loose ends, but I can't go back to that world, to the heirs."
"Gideon." I studied his face and saw how earnest it was. This wasn't a rash decision born from the earlier spat with Roger. "You gave up everything in Osfrid to sail here and be with the heirs. What happened to Euros calling you? To you wanting a purer, principled life?"
"I'm still called, and I still want that. But it's not going to be with the heirs. It's not going to be with the Orthodox, either. Maybe no one's way is my way. Maybe I have to create my own."
There was such strength and conviction in his words that I truly believed he would find his way. I was reminded of some of our earlier conversations when he'd described his faith so passionately that I could understand why he was so driven. "You'll figure it out, Gideon. I believe in you." He lifted his gaze from the bread he'd been poking at.
"You've always believed in me, Tamsin, even when I didn't believe in myself. You..."
His blue-grey eyes scrutinized me a few more moments, and then he glanced away again.
"Well, anyway, I can't quite bring myself to ride back 2 days with Roger. I'll see if Jacob will let me ride with him."
It wasn't until later that evening that I finally caught up with Jago. He came to see me in my room, and we threw ourselves at each other the instant the door shut. Without a pause in kissing, we staggered back into the room and onto the rug before the fire. My yearning for him was driven both by the happy affection surging in my heart and the desire crackling through my body.
I hadn't had a glimmer of interest in anything physical with anyone since Harry, and I'd almost thought I was incapable of it, like maybe he'd ruined it for me. But I came alive now, suddenly feeling as though I could never touch or kiss Jago enough.
"You're just being nice to me because of the river passage," he teased at one point, lying on his side, half propped up with his elbow. With his other hand, he traced the neckline of my dress and walked his fingers up to my cheek, where he brushed stray strands of hair away. "I'm nice to lots of people," I shot back, "and believe me, I'm not rolling about and kissing them."
"Well, that's a relief. I'd hate to think you were doing it out of pity or obligatory gratitude."
I sat up and gave him a long, lingering kiss on his lips. "I am terribly grateful, though. It's a relief to know the others are taken care of. Now I can focus on Mary. I feel so much closer to her now, like she's within reach."
"She is."
He shifted up too, and straightened his shirt. No one's clothing had come off, but it was certainly less tidy than it had been before.
"I like that name. Why did you name her that?"
I gazed across the room, but it was the past I saw. "Her full name's Meredith, but I always planned on calling her Mary. There was so much heartache and strife in the time leading up to her birth. I picked the name as a sort of reminder to myself that things were going to change, that I was going to make them change."
Was her father ever involved?
"Aside from the obvious, no. We had no contact until right before I signed with Jasper. My family was about to collapse under the bills, so I finally went to him and asked for money. Do you know what he said to me? 'I'm very sorry for you and your child, but you got yourself into this. You'll have to get yourself out of it.' Who says something like that? It made me realize I was right to have stayed away. Mary's better off with no father in her life than one like that."
"From what you've said, she's got plenty of other people to love her."
My heart lightened a little. "Yes, and she might as well have two fathers, with the way my pa and brother spoil her." I leaned into him, and we sat quietly for several minutes, watching the fire. He stroked my hair, and I traced circles on his palm. When Jago stifled a yawn, I lifted my head and laughed. "Sorry, is this boring?"
"No."
He tipped my face upward and pressed his lips to my forehead. "But it's been a long day. I should get to bed soon." We kissed again, and then some more, before I was able to break away and ask, "Do you want to go to bed here?" There was a slight intake of breath as he searched my face. Firelight cast golden glimmers in his eyes, which were filled with open longing.
"You know I do, but I can't. Not when I don't have anything to offer you."
"You didn't have anything earlier either." I rested my palms on his chest. "But you were willing to go to my bed then."
"I know, I know. And I get that there's this unspoken agreement that there is no agreement, but..."
He put his hands over mine. "You deserve more."
"Like a payment? This isn't some amazing deal we're striking.
The only thing I want right now is you."
"I know, I didn't mean it to sound conditional. I just need to think some things over."
"Jago, Tamsin, this isn't an easy thing for me to turn down, believe me." He kissed my forehead again. "We can talk more later. It's a long trip, but let me go now, while I've still got the willpower." Disappointment filled me, and his show of principles only made the yearning that much worse. I had a feeling that willpower might crumble with a little more pushing, but I couldn't do that to him. He talked about me deserving more, but what about him? Who was I to ask for a night together after having made it blatantly clear I'd soon be on my way to spend my life with someone else? "Okay, get your rest then. But I'm going to hold you to that bit about it being a long trip." The tension in his face melted into a cheerful grin. I'd expect nothing less. I'll see you in the morning. After a very lengthy kiss goodbye, he finally dragged himself away. I sat on my bed and sighed, filled with an array of emotions. I'd been there about 5 minutes when Saoirse knocked at the door and told me Orla wanted to see me. Puzzled by the late hour, I followed with trepidation and was taken to a small sitting room adjacent to Orla's own bedroom. She sat in a chair near the fire, clad in a dressing robe, combing out her long hair. Seeing me, she said, "Ah, Tamsin, thank you for coming." I was curious. "Did you know Jago Robinson is about to give up everything in his world for you?" Chapter 26. When I answered with only a blank stare, Orla motioned me to sit across from her with a graceful wave of her hand. "What do you mean?" I asked, once I'd recovered myself. She set the comb down and leaned back, a small smile playing at her lips despite her grave eyes. "If we ever get a moment, I'll have to show you my horses. Lovely little things. Black with ivory manes. A couple of years back, I saw some like them, travelling among Lorandian traders. They weren't for sale, and their owner told me they were hard to obtain. He said with some scepticism that to buy my own, I'd need a genius tradesman. So I located one, and he got me the horses. Jago told me that's how you met," I said. "But what does that have to do with what's happening now?" "My horses were hard to get in Adoria. Jago's silvers were very hard to get. And the one he's boarding in the south, nearly impossible. Felicia, I thought she was his sweetheart when we first met." That broadened Orla's smile, though her somber demeanor remained. "I'm sure it seems that way. Between her and the silvers, my understanding is he's setting himself up very nicely to make a fortune in raising specialty horses. He's got a good head for what's going to be in demand, and a good heart for taking care of animals. He just needs to pay down the debt for them, and his land a little bit more." The wry smile dimmed. "So, you can imagine my surprise when he came to me earlier and asked if I was interested in buying the silvers." I leaned forward. "Pebble and Dove? He wouldn't. He loves those horses." "Apparently, not as much as he loves you." "But no!" That was as far as I got with any sort of coherent response in my shocked state. "But yes. When I declined, he offered to sell me Felicia instead." "What? I don't understand. Why would he do that?" "He said he wants to marry you." I opened my mouth, but couldn't manage a single word this time. Orla shrugged. "I gather he needs a large sum of money, quickly. Or rather, you do." I slumped back and clutched the couch's fabric, as though that might stop the world from spinning. "I can't believe this." "So you do need money. Or you want the money." Her eyes scrutinized me in that cunning way of hers. "I understand you've come here to marry well, but maybe you could make yourself stick it out and live humbly a while. Assuming you love him back." "You bloody well know I do!" The words came out before I could stop them, and I straightened up again. "And it's not about forcing myself to make a sacrifice to humble living. All I've ever done is live humbly." She took my outburst calmly, knowing my outrage wasn't directly targeted at her. "Well, I figured there must be more to it. Jago doesn't strike me as the type to upend all of his plans to impress a woman, though he's certainly no stranger to extreme actions when he thinks it's truly called for." "Like the medicine," I murmured, still stunned. "Like the medicine. He didn't waver about risking the stocks then, and he didn't waver when I questioned him now." I blinked and focused back on her. "Stocks?" Didn't he tell you that? It was his punishment for selling us Constance's bitter root.
I thought he paid a fine. I think he did both. I'm sure he can tell you more about it later.
I don't know. Apparently he doesn't tell me much of anything.
Are you sure this horse sale was for me?
I didn't really need her nod to confirm it.
I felt sick to my stomach, upset that he'd make this sacrifice, and yet hopeful that it could actually work.
He can't sell them. You said you told him no, so that's that.
Oh, there are others he can go to. Perhaps not in Kerneil, but if he's determined to find a buyer, he will.
I confess, if we didn't have the possibility of war looming on the horizon, I might have been tempted. But I can't spend that much money on my own indulgence.
What happens if he does sell them?
Well, he loses the breeding stock to establish a specialty ranch. He has other horses, I know, more common ones, so maybe he could do something less lucrative with them. I'm not sure how it would play into his land in Denham.
His land? He talked like he was only leasing something there.
Yes, but he's also in a complex arrangement to eventually own it. He makes payments on it, and that's where the rest of his debt is coming from. It's a huge amount of land, with a huge price. The loan is backed by the understanding that his racing enterprise has enormous potential.
Not if he doesn't have any horses.
Maybe he can race some of his common ones. I guess it depends on if you're bringing in any debt.
I caught the unspoken question.
Yes, I don't know how it'd match up to a horse sale, but it'd cost a lot if he... That is, if we...
I looked down at my hands, unable to continue. What costs was he taking into consideration? My marriage fee, certainly. Mary's medicine and extra expenses.
I don't know then, Orla said, her voice unusually gentle. If he has to forfeit the horses, and then the land by default, he'll still have the travelling trade business. It's not as glamorous, but you'd be together. Maybe that's worth the sacrifice. Sparks flew up from the fire as logs shifted. I watched them a few moments, and then slumped onto the couch. A long time ago, there was a young man that things didn't work out with. I know now he never had any intention of making them work, but at the time, when it first fell apart, I'd been certain that we could be together if he was willing to sacrifice certain parts of his life. Yes, it would shock his peers. Yes, it would anger his father. But that's what love is, right? Doing anything for the other person. It devastated me that he couldn't. I hated him for not loving me enough to keep us together, no matter what. Then I just hated him because he was an ass. I lingered on that memory a moment, and then lifted my gaze from the fire to Orla. Now, here's someone who is willing to make a sacrifice for me, an even bigger one, and I'm devastated again. Jago's built his dream from the ground up, holding on to something most would have lost as a childhood fancy. And it's his choice to let it go, or to postpone it, she said. But my participation in this isn't his choice. I turned to the fire again, but didn't really see it. My mind's eye was back with Jago, back when we'd been kissing, and I'd invited him to spend the night. I can't stay, not when I don't have anything to offer you. I can't let him give up his future, I said, recalling the way his eyes glowed when he spoke about raising horses. We can't. Orla arched an eyebrow. We?
He's your friend. You can't want to see him throw away everything he's worked for.
No, but I also don't want to see him throw you away.
I want him to be happy, and I think you could make him happy.
She ran a hand through her hair, messing up what she'd so neatly combed. And I think he could make you happy too. You know, I recommended him to you when we met, not just because he could help, but because I thought you two would connect. Not like this, of course. But you both have an innate drive to help people,
often going to extremes you don't fully realize the consequences of. And that's exactly why I'm going to save Jago from himself. We lapsed into silence, and Orla walked over to a table at the room's side. She poured herself a glass of wine and held another glass up in question. I shook my head.
You might need it if this is going forward, she said when she returned to her spot.
I know I will.
Then you'll help me.
She answered by way of a long drink of the wine.
Are you sure this is the path you want, Tamsin?
I want him, but not like this. I don't want him spending his life with me and always wondering what would have happened if he'd stuck with his first plan.
There it was, the familiar, mocking smile.
Tamsin, no one sticks with their first plan.
Wasn't that the truth? Some days, I didn't even know what plan I was on anymore.
Orla, I said, you act like I should go off with him. But if you believe that so easily, why did you call me here tonight?
You wanted me to stop the horses from getting sold.
The smile slipped.
Yes, but I guess I was just hoping you'd have some other plan to take its place, to get this money you need so badly.
I looked down at my hands, worried tears might come to my eyes.
I do have a plan. The same one I've had since coming to Adoria. I'm sticking with it.
Now, are you going to help me help Jago stick with his?
The next day was filled with preparations. The decision to make a second trip a couple of weeks after the first was big news. Its main purpose, of course, was to help settle the conflict brewing around us. But an extra trip meant a handful of spots were available, and many wanted to take advantage of it. Merchants and other interested parties poured into the keep to petition Orla and her sisters. Meanwhile, Harper and Jago were trying to rustle up resources to help transport everyone from Constancy to Kerneal. They had Ikori at their disposal, but Harper was hoping to stop by an outpost on the way back to pick up other soldiers, seeing as the heirs might not react well to a group of Ikori coming to town, even sanctioned ones. I worked with them, since I had a special knowledge of what it'd take to accommodate my friends. They'd need rations for the trip itself, and I bartered more of Jasper's belongings away. The distraction kept me from agonizing over my decision with Jago all day. Instead, I just agonized over it for most of the day. When Jago excused himself to take a meeting with the merchant who'd greeted us upon entering the city, I knew what it was about. And when Jago returned, mood dimmed. I knew what had happened. Although it wasn't Orla's nature to command her subjects' decisions, she had sent word to the man this morning that she would look very, very favourably on him if he declined any opportunities to buy Jago's horses. And I knew too why Orla called Harper for a private talk, and why he looked so perplexed afterward. It all left me with a storm of conflicted feelings. I was pleased that our plan was all falling into place, but knowing what was to come tore at my heart. Jago and I didn't have a chance to talk alone until after dinner. We sat together by the fireplace in my room, his hand over mine, as we both rested from the long day.
I'm going to miss you, he said.
Panic shot through me until he added, after seeing you every day now, I don't know how I'll go a week without you.
I relaxed slightly.
Well, maybe you'll like the peace and quiet instead of having me badger you all the time.
Usually it's deserved, so I don't mind. I'm more worried you'll like the peace and quiet of not having my chatter around.
Peace and quiet's overrated, I teased, eliciting a lopsided grin. I've gotten so used to your chatter, I'll hardly know what to do without it.
He took hold of my other hand and pulled me toward him. Our break here had given him the chance to clean up and shave, and no matter what he said about not being dashing, he looked pretty fine to me. But it was the earnestness in his green and gold eyes glittering in the firelight that mesmerized me the most.
"Do you mean that?" he asked.
I swallowed and looked away. If I could have just lied and spurned him then and there,
It would have saved me the trouble of all the contingencies Aula and I were working out. But I couldn't do it. He would see the truth in me.
About peace and quiet? I asked, in a lame attempt at evasion.
Well, sort of. But I think you know what I'm really